work session on House Bill 3637. Welcome, Representative Krieger.
Excuse me, please. I've had one of those calls. Everybody in the building.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who scarf down those states out there.
Vice Chair Leonard, committee members. For the record, I am Wayne Krieger, the representative from District 48 in South Coast. As you recall, when I testified regarding House Bill 3637, I almost said a couple of weeks ago, I referred to the bill as having been gutted but not yet stuffed. And we are at now to the point of the Dash 11 amendment.
Pretty good stuff, isn't it?
And so it's been a long process, but I think we will eventually get there. I put together a working group last week. Jim Myron from Oregon Trout, Steve Kafori, American Fisheries, Al Elkins, Oregon Hunters, Phil Donovan, Oregon Guides and Packers, Rod Harder, Sportsman's Defenseman, and myself. I also had input from STEP coordinator in Coos County, numerous commercial fishermen, several guides in my area, and also several legislators I've had contact with. I'm going to be very brief today. There's still some work that needs to be done. Chair Jensen is aware of that, and Representative Morgan is also helping us with certain parts of the bill. The Dash 11s are the new bill. That's what it amounts to. I have worked for and with that department, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, since 1964, and I feel very strongly that this bill is needed. I believe it will help restore accountability to the governor, the legislature, and most important, to the general public. It results in a Oregon Fish and Wildlife resources being managed by an informed commission, a commission that sets good policy, and a new director that is respected and supported by the governor, legislature, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife employees, and most importantly, an agency that is respected and serves the public. And I think that perception that is out there that this agency doesn't seem to do that, and questions about the commission that over time, the present commission, if they're given some direction, it can move forward and bring some credibility back to the agency. If you have any questions on what I've changed or said today from last week, I'd be happy to answer those.
Sorry, work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krieger, the concern I have through all the iterations of the Dash whatever amendments is in your the section, I guess it's still section one, regarding the interest areas and members being appointed to represent the following interest areas, and with sport fishing, commercial fishing, hunting, and then background and agriculture, forestry, and then three members at large. And I guess I'm looking at this as a pretty exclusive list, excluding such groups, interest groups or interest areas such as the conservationists or, you know, those in, involved in wildlife protection or.
Vice Chair Leonard, Representative Worth, we on page 2, line 25, one member having a background, we changed that from the original with interest, person having interest. Or person representing, that wording was changed. The committee felt that that was too restrictive. The other thing that I might say is.
Excuse me, Representative, where are we?
Page 2.
Page 2.
Line 25, one member having a background in.
Right.
We did away with a member representing.
Okay.
We felt that that was too restrictive, it made it much more difficult for the governor to find the right people. As far as having a. One of the things that I have found during the time that I've been with the state police and out and about is that there were people, for instance, let's say Brookings, where I'm from, someone maybe from Vail, way out where the wildlife resources are. There was a great number of the people from the valley and in the metro area. Where do they hunt? They don't hunt in Portland. The majority of those people go to Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, goose hunting. They go to the coast where they're fishing, a lot of it in the coastal streams. They go to the high lakes. We felt it was important that those landowners who own that land that is not only used by those people but also is adjacent to the federal land have an opportunity to be on that commission. And basically, they fairly well have been. I relate it back, as I did last time, to the Board of Forestry. There's nothing there that specifically says there has to be a member who represents Oregon Small Woodlands groups or a small landowner group. However, traditionally, I'm the second person that was kind of from that background. The governor now is looking for another person from that background, the small woodland community, replacing me. I left the board on January 3rd. I think it's important that the groups who, whether you be a hunting group, a fishing group, a commercial fisherman, whatever it might be, that they do, in fact, have representation on that board. The commission, while I like commission, as I stated last week, has the most diverse and complex group of people to work with. They have muzzleloaders, they have archers, they have people that are dealing with watershed councils. They have to interrelate with the timber industry, the ag community, the guides and packers, charter boats, and then the whole thing on the east side. I think it's probably having people on that commission. You do have three at large.
Yeah.
And that can be from anywhere. That can be from the environmental community. You may find a person that needs a business mind on that commission. But that does give the governor the ability to put that diversity in, but specifically has some disciplines that we think they need to be represented.
I see the change in the background. I guess that the subsection C, though, it still says appoint to represent interest areas. So, and I appreciate the members at large, but this certainly, the wording certainly does put and the interest of the sport fishers, commercial fishers, hunting, ag, and forestry certainly at a higher level of importance than a conservationist, environmentalist, a business person, whatever could be at large members. And I guess what I'm wondering is, and you kind of answered it, is does a problem exist? And from what you said, that, you know, that's how there's nothing that precludes these members from being appointed as it stands now. And according to your testimony, they are being appointed now. So I just have a problem, I guess, elevating the importance of one interest group over another, if it has to do at all with fish or wildlife interests.
Chair Jensen, Representative Worth, I think, from what I've seen, that is precisely what's wrong. There have been commissions that have not had that broad representation. It hasn't been there with each and every commission. The people that you name, timber, ag, da 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 da, are in fact the people that own the land that most of the people hunt on and have land that's adjacent, are very much affected by the policies of the Wildlife Commission. Oftentimes they feel that their concerns, from whatever discipline they're from, are not being addressed, and they do not have a person there who understands the on-the-ground activities that may affect them that this commission might adopt by policy. I think that helps that situation from getting to that point as a safeguard that they are there. You do, as you mentioned, have three others that the governor can appoint to cover any other areas that he feels are important.
Thank you.
Father?
No. Yep.
Representative Worth, did you have a follow-up?
No.
Oh, Representative Lee.
Oh, I'm sorry, my question was answered.
Okay, I'm just trying to do the math here. The commission, according to the bill, is limited to seven members. And I see seven members designated by different geographic regions. And on page two, we get to sub C, and I understand that further, those geographic regions have to represent those interests, and I understand that. But then when we flip to page three, the three at-large members would almost seem as though we're at 10 members as opposed to seven. What am I not understanding?
No, I don't believe that's what was meant, Representative Leonard. I haven't tried to add those numbers up in such a way that I would ever get to where it says in the beginning of the bill that it's seven members. The original commission was authorized, the last legislature, to go to nine.
Right.
that talks about the four specific disciplines and three at large. The total membership is seven.
Yeah, but maybe staff can help me. Do you see my...
I do, but...
Well, we have on page two, A through G outlines which geographic areas seven members must be from. And I understand further, because of the modification in sub C, that those seven members, one of which has to have a background in sport fishing and commercial fishing. But when we flip over to page three, I don't see how you can have three at-large members when the seven spots are already taken up with people representing specific geographic areas.
Okay. Clarify that for you, Mr. Sanders. The original seven that you're looking at, which is A through G,
mm-hmm.
Come under subsection B. And in addition to what is described in subsection B, subsection C says
mm-hmm.
that the members will have mm-hmm. some additional qualifications, sport fishing, et cetera, type of thing. And there are four specific areas listed there,
mm-hmm.
plus three at large.
And I get the four, and I understand what you're saying up through D. But how can you be an at-large member but have to come from a specific area of the state? I guess that's my...
At large as far as the interest groups are concerned, or yeah. the...
Is that something, yeah. is that not unusual to do?
No.
In addition to the interest areas in the following manner. And four interest areas and three that can represent any fall into any.
I see. So it isn't, okay, I see.
Wait, that's what we
have. I see. I mean, our at-large normally means
yeah.
like no geographic boundaries, but this is in terms of interest.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
And it may be better if we try to specify
three
non-interest members. Non-interest area.
Okay.
Rather than that confusing language on that. Are there other... Representative Tomei, it looks like she has a question.
She's very confused. We don't have... We had way back, a long time ago, the engrossed. But that was only 1 through 3 amendment. So we don't have a new engrossed.
No.
No.
So it's hard for me to take this and put it. Am I putting it with this original?
The replacement of the bill.
We're just replacing.
This is the whole bill.
This yep. is the bill.
It's the whole bill.
Yeah.
So at one point we were also. This just modifies the membership. It does not have anything to do with the director or the staff person, right?
No.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
It does. Can you show me where that is?
On page 3, line 24, the governor shall designate one member of the State Wildlife Commission's chairperson. That part's there.
Got that. That's the chair.
The chair. There is nothing here that allows the governor to appoint directly.
The director?
I think if I'm correct, Representative Tomei, you're looking at the issue of the director.
Correct.
Yeah.
Is that being addressed in this bill?
That has not been addressed in this bill.
Okay.
There was a dash 6 amendment that provided for that. That's one of the things we've talked to the governor's staff about this morning.
Okay, and that's been eliminated.
That's out for now.
Great. Thank you. Dash 6 there. Got it. Okay.
So that we are in understanding that with the things that we've had, the position of the director has not been addressed in the dash 11 amendments. The dash 11 amendments otherwise replace all of the other amendments in the bill that we
have. Right. So the director, that issue.
That issue is still at large. Okay. Mm-hmm. Representative Tomei, follow up?
No, that's okay.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just have a question, but currently the chairperson is appointed by the commission, so we are in fact changing the appointment responsibility of power then from the commission to the governor under this bill.
On line, they just rearranged.
That is, Representative, that is true.
Yes.
The commission currently appoints their own chair.
Right.
And this bill allows the governor.
Governor, so they designate one person as the chairperson. That is a change. Chair Jensen and Representative Ward, we felt that that would help bring accountability directly from that director to the governor and also to the commission.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Tomei.
A different question. Representative Krieger, was there a discussion at all about including the interest groups that Representative Worth was talking about? South and Friends of Oregon.
Representative Jensen and Representative Tomei, there was, but there was no agreement that each and every interest group. We were more, I think, at the time looking for interest groups that dealt directly on the ground with the activities, the land that was, and people that were involved, that type of thing. Because there's probably 50 people that you could name that would have an interest.
Right.
Maybe not an on-the-ground interest in the activities that actually take place with the Wildlife Commission.
Follow up. Their interest may be very indifferent from the environmental group's interest, however. And so those specifically have not been addressed, as I understand it.
Not specifically.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Leonard.
Representative Krieger, do the commissioners serve without compensation?
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
And I'm just noticing that on page 4, removing their meetings. The number of meetings from once every 3 months to once a month, is that an issue at all for non-compensated board members?
Chair Jensen, Representative Leonard, that commission, I think, with the extra duties they've had, have been meeting more often than that anyway.
Oh.
It's fairly frequent for them to do it once a month anyway.
Yes, sir.
Representative Krieger, I think we may have an amendment that's still necessary there. I think we probably want to go back to some other language because we run into a possibility of a Christmas, for example, meeting where they don't have any business, and to strap them to a meeting might be inappropriate. But your point was correctly taken.
Representative Leonard, my address that we had brought up the fact that so many times when they have a meeting that's not really a scheduled one, it's to address specifically an issue, for instance, a shrimp permit problem or whatever it might be, and if that meeting was scheduled in Baker that next time, wouldn't it be good to have your shrimp meeting in Baker? We need to give them the diversity, the time, the latitude to move those where they need to.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Representative Krieger, it's just a comment here. You've had a lot of questions on the defining of a member by their background. I know many environmentalist conservation people who have backgrounds in these industries. They're not necessarily precluded.
Representative Jensen, Smith, almost every board member there now has more than one discipline, or in other words, they hunt and fish, or they belong to a watershed council, or they belong to Sierra Club, watershed council and fish. The better, the more varied their backgrounds are, I think the better we're going to be.
So follow up, this wouldn't preclude them from being on the commission then?
No.
Right, thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krieger, the Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife Commission does deal with state lands, public lands. Correct.
Chair Jensen, Representative Worth. In what way do you mean? They manage the wildlife resources on it, yeah.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So, and I understand your argument in the specified areas of interest, because they are the on-the-ground people dealing with these issues as landowners, but I guess, again, I would submit that if you're dealing with public lands, then not necessarily landowners, but public at large who might be specific conservationists or wildlife conservationists or environmentalists would be put on the people on the ground, just as landowners who own the land that people are hunting on are. And again, I agree with Representative Smith that these people are not necessarily precluded from serving under this bill or the way it is now, as I mentioned earlier, the people from the with a background in forestry, ag, hunting, and commercial fishing are not precluded from serving now. But again, it's just the, I think, level of importance that are given to these interests, area interests, because they're specifically named now in statute. So that's my concern.
Representative Clement.
Thank you. Representative Krieger, was the disparity of the population in the districts the A through G? It seemed to me in District B that we probably got over a million people living in that district, probably on down to say 100 or 200,000 in some of these others. Is that at all addressed?
Sarah Jensen, Representative Tillman. The population of the people is not representative of where the wildlife not only is, but where it is utilized. The people in that county area you're talking about do some fishing in the Columbia, the Willamette, some sloughs, and a little hunting around the fringes. But the majority of those people also go, most of their time is spent out of the area. Another thing to remember is that a much smaller percentage of the metro area take part in hunting and fishing compared to people in those communities.
But probably the number from the urban area would be as high as the numbers of people from the rest of the region.
I believe so.
Yeah. And isn't it my understanding, too, that probably most of the fish that are coming, certainly through the Willamette, are coming through the urban area?
They have a short period of area of several miles, about 25, 30 miles, to the Portland up about
right.
Oregon City and up that way, yes.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Would you care, Representative, how many miles do they have after they get out of Multnomah County?
Well, far more. It's a choke point, pass-through point. We've probably got another 70, 80, 90 miles up towards Oak Ridge.
And how about the tributaries?
That's each one of them is 40 or 52, if you take the McKenzie and the rest of them.
So we're looking at literally hundreds and hundreds of miles. Of, I think, you know, and the other thing, Representative, I think in terms of the population thing you're looking at, that you'd find if we look at the numbers on it, the population for the area of Marion County here, where we're in, which includes lots of Tillamook, Lincoln, and Lynn, et cetera, has a larger population than the population of either of the other two.
Of these?
Mm-hmm. I believe that would be correct. But I think it was part of the intention of the group that looked at it, mm-hmm. that the population was not necessarily, and I realize we could look at population as a criteria,
mm-hmm.
but I think some of the thinking was that population is not necessarily criteria for Fish and Wildlife Commission, or it might be or might not be for some other agencies.
But if I could follow up on that line of thinking, as I'm seeing all the people who have been fishing just in the last few days in the Willamette and in the Columbia River, I mean, we're talking about thousands of people. So it seemed to me that probably we've got just as many people in this urban area who are interested in these issues as we have throughout the rest of the state. And it seems that there's some disparity here, that we're overrepresented in this bill, overrepresented in the less populated areas of the state.
And it's, again, Representative, not necessarily just fishing that this commission deals with.
Well, I know that. I know.
And if I can take you to my district and look at all of the Portland trucks and pickups come elk season.
But then that's even more reason for the people in the Portland area to be represented.
There are those who would argue that.
Representative Denton, I guess that's why you don't find any three or four people on the Portland Port Commission from Vail, Oregon, or Gold Beach either.
And we have Representative Lee at this point.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was about the timing of the meetings, and I wasn't clear of what the chair is thinking of in an amendment on.
I think that the meetings, the amendment the chair is going to propose is that they be allowed, you know, go back to the 3 months sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and realizing that at the present time they meet almost monthly.
Right. Every 6 weeks, I believe.
Well, I mean, it's a, but that, you know, that should at least in part be dependent upon the business mm-hmm. that they have to deal mm-hmm. with, you know. And if they're kind of like a fireman, if they don't have any business, you know, they can sit around and read novels.
You're talking about another generation.
Well,
it's also with the ESA issues they're dealing with now, and that changes on things. The court decision is going to throw in, but we're seeing on the Columbia River as far as the lack of water and the seasons, they're going to have to open and close and adjust and do the things. They're going to be meeting much more than what the statute says. Mm-hmm.
And to follow up, I think my question was really related more with subsection 5 on lines 15 and 16 of page 4, where it requires 7 meetings in different locations around the state, and that not kind of jibing with the 3 months, that perhaps they'll be meeting 7 times anyway.
I wouldn't think that will be a problem for them. Other. Are you suggesting firemen work 40-hour week now?
We work 53 hours a week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I thought it was video games.
Another generation. That's another generation. We're inspecting, teaching classes, since you're giving me this opportunity. Three fires, and you got those patrols out on the harbor, you know, going to be those.
That's to pick up all of those fishermen that I've fallen
out of. You made me nervous when you said pick up and then a little pause there.
Any rod holders on that boat?
Let's just stop now. Let's just go for this.
Representative Krieger, the chair really appreciates the work that you've done with the stakeholders in bringing this to us. And the staff would be, or staff, the committee would be, you know, well advised that we have been working with the governor's office in conjunction with this to say that I think we're in total agreement with the governor's office at this point. That may be an overstatement, but we have, I think, made some significant progress as far as that office is concerned. And like any time you're going to make progress, there's a little give and a little take, and we'll continue to do this. You'll see this bill will be in front of us at every meeting we have until we finally get it worked out. This is one of those bills that will take some time, and there'll be a lot of people having input on it. And if you have input for either the chair or for Representative Krieger between, you know, we'll welcome that input and take it into consideration as we're working this thing through.
We can do a little wave to the governor's office, I know they're watching.
Thank you, Representative, and we'll let you get back to spending the people's money and we can get on here. Is there anybody else who wants to, talk to you on this? We will close then the work session on House Bill 3637, and we'll move to a work session on House Bill 2788. And we have Christine McNiff, I think, that we would like to have come forward, and she's doing that, staff will bring us up to date where we're at and what's been going on.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, members of the committee. House Bill 2788 is back before us with some amendments attached to your SMS. You have dash fours. We did hear testimony regarding the dash ones, which was the definition of maintenance. However, there were dash two amendments that was also the definition of maintenance, but it also added an emergency clause. Because of the dash twos and the dash fours, I had council combine those into the dash five, which I'm passing out to you right now, which has the definition of maintenance, and the dash fours were the amendments addressing the Cyrus's concern about contracts already in existence.
Question, is the dash four included in the dash five, or is that?
Yes, sir, it is.
It is. Okay.
The dash five is the dash twos, which were the maintenance definition and the emergency clause, and the dash four.
Two, three, and four.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Christina McNitt with Oregon Water Resources Congress. I think what Ms. Sheely Circa is telling you is that two plus four equals five.
Wonderful.
The original language first presented by myself on the first hearing about the definition of maintenance includes an emergency clause, and the latest language is an attempt to address the Cyrus family's concern with language that says the amendments to this act, basically, do not affect a contract entered into before the effective date of this 2001 act.
Questions for Christina?
Christina, where does it, excuse me, Mr. Chair, where does it say that, Christina? Representative Jensen, Representative Clement, it says it's on page two of the dash five amendments. Do you have those in front of you, the dash five?
Line 17.
Page two, line 15.
Got it.
Eight.
Okay, thank you.
And Christina, the understanding that you have of the Cyrus's objections was that they might that their conditions of contract were being unilaterally changed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I feel somewhat uncomfortable trying to represent the Cyrus's concerns, but I listened carefully at the last hearing.
Can the chair rephrase that and ask you specifically why you worded the amendment as it is currently worded then?
Mr. Chair and members, what I attempted to do was to alleviate any possibility that this language in 2788 will be interpreted to apply to the Cyrus's situation, which again is a contract dispute between an irrigation district and a property owner, unfortunately, and they have been in and out of court
and they are now operating under a settlement agreement. And so this language, even though the bill you'll see on the first page clearly says it's relating to irrigation district property, so that begs the question whether or not it applied to the Cyruses to begin with. But even recognizing that concern, we went further in trying to assure them that it wouldn't apply to them by specifically adding language that says this statute would not apply to contracts entered into before the effective date of this act.
When we include piping as maintenance, do we stretch the normal definition of maintenance with that inclusion?
Mr. Chair, members, that again was a question that arose at the last hearing, and I guess my response is this is all interpretation, perhaps. You could even make the case that perhaps this language in the bill isn't needed, because when you run through existing statutes, it talks about canals and pipelines and other water works, which we have determined to be pipelines, but a court doesn't necessarily determine that to be a pipeline. So that's why we're going through this whole exercise, and I guess it could be debated. In my mind, under Section 1, adding current law only has three definitions in the irrigation district statutes of board, district, and owner of land. And so we're proposing to add the definition of maintenance to include but not be limited to actions to preserve or improve existing conditions. And one of those is piping. So is lining. I don't quite know how to answer your question.
If I could, Mr. Chair, as I recall, I either asked this or somebody else did, and I was interested in the question, but it was explained that it was a conservation technique often used to preserve water in ditches that might otherwise evaporate. So in that sense, it was in the context of maintenance.
I see that Harrison has come to the building, and I'm hoping you won't mind if he in the room.
I'd like to remind you that Mr. Harrison, in the last hearing, succinctly said in 2 minutes what it took me to see.
Harrison Conley, Deputy Legislative Counsel, for the record. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, now that I have you here, Mr. Harrison, is there any possibility under this wording that the Harrisons, excuse me,
Cyruses,
might encounter more expense in maintenance than it appears to be the intention of the committee and the sponsor of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so, for a number of reasons. One, Christina made an excellent point that this is relating to irrigation district property, and apparently it sounds like the Cyruses own their property and the district leases the opportunity to use it. Additionally, I think that this contract, that this applicability clause on page 2, section 11, is fairly clear. Number 3, I think that really comports with law, that is, with the Constitution. I think the state cannot impair contract rights, cannot change its own obligations with respect to a contract by subsequent changes in law. So I think the applicability clause really is sort of hitting, it's over the top. I think it's more than is required, but I believe that this, in fact, clearly does not apply to the Cyruses contract.
Are there any other questions? I would want to go on a little more. Can you And I'm, if I'm stalling for time, yes, I am. I've asked Water Resources to come back, to the room. While I'm stalling for time on this, or trying to get some answers on this, tell me, you know, what is the fundamental purpose of piping?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Piping is, in fact, I could refer to my original testimony. At issue in this whole entire bill is the ability of irrigation districts to make improvements in their water delivery systems. Piping is one way to do that. When you convert an open canal delivery system, you conserve water and improve your ability to stretch that water out. In fact, it's called, new water. Isn't that correct, Representative Lee?
New water?
Saved water.
Saved water.
Sure, water.
And you can then allocate it, to, a combined, beneficial use, and sometimes that includes, in-stream purposes. So the point is that it costs millions of dollars in many cases, and in many cases you have federal partners to help you in doing that, to secure those funds. And once an irrigation district makes that commitment in their canal system, they need to be able to preserve their current ability to maintain those systems under current statutes, once they're piped.
But isn't it also possibly true that when we go to piping, that we artificially distort the or change the environment with perhaps such things as wetlands and other species that might rely on the open ditches?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's an ongoing discussion, I think, as every district enters into these types of improvements. There's no doubt that when you line a canal or pipe a canal, that the water is more quickly delivered and it's therefore conserved. And in statute, districts are directed to conserve water and to use it in the most efficient manner. But when you have an open ditch, there's what's called seepage, and it sort of goes through the land that it's traveling nearby, and there's no doubt when you pipe that wouldn't occur. And there are some benefits and values to that as well.
Thank you. The other reason that pipe is maintenance is because if you're running open canals, those canals deteriorate season by season, and if you don't eventually put in lining or a pipe, then you have considerably more maintenance besides the conservation value. But the federal laws also indicate pipelines under their maintenance statutes under the Bureau of Reclamation Authorities. So that's why districts have had to conform. Basically, they're required by federal law to conserve water, even more so than Oregon law.
Even at the expense of wetlands?
Yes, in some cases, even at the expense. In the Grants Pass Irrigation District, they tried to divert some water to maintain the wetlands and found that eventually they had to stop doing that because of other problems it created. But I believe Tom Paul could tell you more about that.
That's why I was.
Mr. Chair, members, the department's not here yet, so I'll just add another consideration of pipelines is flat-out safety. Some of these ditches are wide, and there's a lot of water moving quickly through them, and kids think it's fun to play in it, and that can be a dangerous situation. Another thing is they seem to be an attractive nuisance for garbage. People dump shopping carts and all sorts of things into these ditches, and it's more difficult to maintain.
And up in eastern Oregon, they do something like that? Yes, Representative.
The ditches are typically dug, aren't they, originally for the delivery of water?
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct.
So that, to the extent that there's wetlands, that was kind of an accidental secondary thing that occurred. I mean, the primary purpose of the ditch was to deliver water.
Okay. How long has this ditch been there?
Which ditch might you be referring to?
The one we're referring to here.
I couldn't answer that, Representative Lee. Do you know how long?
It's the 1880s.
The one for the Cyruses? Yes, that was in the 1880s. That water right goes back to, I think, 1887.
sufficiently long enough, I would think, that we could consider that any wetlands maybe to be part of the natural habitat at this point.
Who didn't know?
Well, I'm taking a conservative view here. I'm sitting up there with him, and you're going over there.
Once he gets into his conservative...
I can't sync with you.
Well, no, but it is a fact that from the perspective of federal government, if you have inundated a piece of land sufficiently enough to where the soil is becoming hydric and so is the vegetation, that they would consider it a wetland.
With great relief, the department has arrived on the scene. Thank you very much, Harris.
Thank you.
Christina. We're having some discussion of piping. We're looking at House Bill 3728 as amended. 2788 as amended. And if you don't have a copy, as you know, staff would be happy to provide you a copy, or I can keep them right here. Okay. And colleagues, for your indulgence here, understand that my questions are coming from having talked with the construction attorney just before coming to committee, and I am trying to, in my own mind, resolve some things, and I hope that the discussion will be beneficial to you as well. We're trying to do that. Good afternoon again, and thank you. And my apologies for not holding your hair, telling you that this was potentially coming. I'm concerned in the issue of the piping, and you know perhaps Christina has sufficiently enlightened us, but as far as the Water Resource Department is concerned and piping, we are defining it as maintenance in this bill. Is that the way the department typically defines piping, or is that new construction?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Tom Byler with the Water Resources Department, and Tom Paul. My take on this is I guess it could go to be either. It could be maintenance. If you were dealing with piping on an existing distribution system, piping also could be something new in terms of a new development on a for increasing the distribution system.
Okay. I think the specific we're concerned about is an existing system, but not physical. For my benefit, what's the advantage of piping?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom Paul, Water Resources Department. Often the districts have an open canal distribution system that has high losses, and districts pipe sections of that to eliminate the loss and seepage through the bottom. That can either be an entire canal system or just pieces. It's very common that some districts annually we'll put in a few feet or short distances of pipe in the existing canal, so it's not new right away, and we view that as maintenance.
Okay. And I guess another discussion that was coming up was the issue of conservation and piping, and the fact that it's seen as conservation, and the question that I had was what happens in the case of when piping might lead to drying up of wetlands?
Mr. Chair, Tom Paul again. We do not control when a individual water right holder or an irrigation district upgrades their distribution system with pipe. if they upgrade their system in either line or pipe a canal and wish to capture that water that has been saved, then we do have a legal process that they go through, which is the allocation of conserved water. But they're not required to go through that process, and they're not required to notify us prior to lining a ditch or installing pipe.
Mr. Chair, I might also add, in going through that process, we do have provisions that protect other water right holders from injury, so that when a district, for example, wanted to do piping as part of an allocation of conserved water program project, they would have to undergo rigorous injury analysis on our part, and that's the protections that we would provide if they went through our system.
I guess my concern is the Cyrus would... are offering some arguments that there are other beneficial uses, maybe of an open ditch that piping may negate. Perhaps wetlands is one thing. Perhaps other species, you know, is another area. And in the name of conservation, it's the department's position that we save water regardless of what it goes to the other.
Mr. Chair, in terms of our authority, we're charged to look at injury to other water rights. We don't have authority in statute to look at these other.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I might suggest, Mr. Chair, in the case of the Walla Walla situation where there was Endangered Species Act listing, that the federal fishery agencies actually encouraged the piping to make water available for in-stream use, and that in addition to water conservation, piping creates energy efficiency so that if you have a closed pipe system, you have pressure which allows people not to then pump and use more electricity.
Anybody else have any questions? Everybody feel like they've talked about this more than they want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or discussions on House Bill 2788-5?
Are you in a work session?
Do you want a motion?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'd move dash 5 to House Bill 2788.
Representative Leonard has moved the dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2788. Is there any discussion?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to be able to support this in any way without a further definition of lining and piping to talk about maintenance, because the water control districts already have authority to do the things that they need to do. I don't see why we are giving them more authority, and their ability to condemn property for this purpose, I think, is problematic.
The other representative Smith.
Ditto.
Ditto. Representative Lee.
I don't see where condemnation has anything to do with this, because the existing ditches were already there. They already have easements. The condemnation had to do with something else in the contract. So I guess I'm not understanding what the issue is. Maybe I need to understand what Representative Cruz's question really is.
Allows the district to make a decision that they're going to go onto somebody's place and put in piping where there is currently a ditch and assess the landowner for that project. And I think that's a problem.
Mr. Chair, may I ask Chair Cruz a question?
But of course, that's what we're for.
Where in the bill do you see that, Chair, or Representative Cruz?
Thank God I'm not a chair here. basically, in Representative, in the list of under three, where section 1.3, where it says maintenance includes, and then it talks about structural repair, head gate repair, but then it gets into fencing, lining and piping, and it's not talking about repair. It's just that as a general rule, which could mean new construction. That was never defined down to be a maintenance issue. That is an ongoing, that could be new construction. And that's my whole problem with the bill.
Okay. I'd like a clarification, if I could, sure. With Representative Cruz. And when you said, and to charge the landowner, I think what we're referring to is that everybody in the district would be paying for whatever the cost of piping would be, not that the landowner would pay for the piping that crossed their district individually.
I guess that's one of the questions that I had with this.
Yeah, that's the case. In the Cyrus's case, that was a private ditch. It was not a ditch of the district, so any maintenance would be required to be done by the Cyrus's because their point of diversion from the district was some ways back. So that was entirely their responsibility. The district, because of their agreement to have some water delivery sharing, had a special arrangement where the district was going to do some of that work. But generally in districts, the district provides the piping for the whole district out of its own funding, and it's often considered to, it's funded generally 60% by the federal government and 40% by the district. So it's not an expense of the district members. They pay for maintenance per acre, but the new capital cost for the materials is either a special election or some kind of special funding. So you wouldn't go in and ask somebody to pipe their ditch when it's a district ditch. If it was their own ditch, you would. So I think that's the difference between the Cyrus situation and an irrigation district generally.
So as this bill now stands, it does not pertain to the Cyrus?
No, because they have a private ditch that's not even in the district.
Well, and then we've excluded it with the
right.
Amendment specifically.
And I think then, if I understand correctly, Representative Cruz's concern is more with the generic issue than it is with the specific issue.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, also, I'm not sure that the water control districts need additional authority to do the things they're doing.
I'd have to share some of that, since much of what we're providing here, I think they already have, don't they?
Well, I felt they already have the right to do the piping. It was just, I believe, that Attorney Ganong spoke about having a problem in a federal district of having to get a special approval from the court for piping projects in a federal district. The rest of the districts do piping without going through that process. So it could be even narrowed to federal districts. But
as I understand on this specific issue, if I remember right, we have a federal issue of involved somewhere too?
Right, the Bureau of Reclamation
required
that the Klamath Irrigation District go through a court proceeding for each pipeline that was going to be replaced because of their contract with the federal government.
And how would this affect the federal government then?
Then what would happen, from my understanding, what Mr. Ganong was saying, is that if they had this approval, if it was clearly written in black and white in the law, they wouldn't have to go to the court for each one of these procedures. Currently, districts that are not federal don't go to court for these procedures anyway. They just put the pipeline in. Unless Christina has any other information on that.
Could I ask Mr. Harrison, is that your understanding?
I don't know if we have Mr. Ganong's testimony in here.
Harrison Conley again for the record. Mr. Chair, frankly, when you get into the distinctions related to the federal districts versus the non-state district, the non-federal districts, I would be in over my head. I would say, however, that it is my impression generally that where we have added pipeline to the bill, there was already an allowance for other waterworks, and I perceived that to be broad enough to include pipeline as opposed to a ditch or a canal.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think it's important that we try to make the distinction between Cyrus's specific case and what we're doing here, which is statewide. And I just want to make sure then that what we're talking about primarily is our ditches that the irrigation district is responsible for and has liability to maintain. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. So I'll follow up. I'm going to support the bill, even though I personally favor the open ditches. I think they look better, and I just like them better. But I'm going to support the bill because, the irrigation district is liable for and responsible for the ditch and has authority over it, and authority is to manage the property and the water that flows through the ditch or the pipe or whatever. So I'm supporting it.
We have a motion to move the dash five amendments. Clerk, will follow up.
Representative Cruz?
No.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Worth?
Yes, aye.
Representative Snow?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative Lennox?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Chair Jensen?
Chair votes aye. Okay. We have the dash five amendments then adopted.
Chair, I'd move House Bill 2788 as amended to the floor with the DPAS recommendation.
House Bill 2788 as amended has been moved to the floor with the DPAS recommendation by Representative Leonard. Is there discussion?
What I said earlier.
Now, I guess if the problem here is dealing with if the feds, I wish that the bill would have specifically dealt with the requirements necessary to avoid going through court. And that would have been something I could support. But like I have already stated, I'm not sure why we're increasing or authority that already exists in a broader sense.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair?
Representative, come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was it your understanding that the Cyruses were satisfied with the amendment that was discussed, or do they still have concern?
I think they have concern, and I think their attorney had concerns. And I had conversations with him this afternoon before we came to committee. Unfortunately, he was not able to be here. We extended the invitation for him to be here. He was not able to be here. I would be making a proposal that that if this measure is to pass, that the Senate make sure that he has the opportunity to have his say at that particular point.
Mr. Chair, as a courtesy to the chair, I'd be happy to vote yes on the bill out of committee, and I'll have further conversations with the Cyruses, and I reserve the right to change my mind on the floor.
We recognize and understand that. Thank you, Representative Coon. Other, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Representative Snow?
Aye.
Representative Cruz?
No.
Representative
King?
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Leonard?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, House Bill 2788 as amended has passed. barrier.
Not really.
We wish to carry this bill, Representative Lee.
I know how to.
Sure, you do it. Thank you.
Representative Lee has been assigned carrier.
Okay.
At this point, we're at, what? We're done?
We're done.
We're done.
Cool.
Can't we do something else?
Madam Chair, we passed how many bills while you were gone?
Bills while you were gone.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Very efficient, Representative.
Thank you very much.
I was impressed.